Welcome to today's luncheon. I'm Nan Hee In, a correspondent governor of the FCC. Before I begin, can I ask everyone to silence their mobile phones or turn them off, please? And a little heads up about upcoming events. In mid-month, we'll have Nick Danziger, a photojournalist who will showcase images he captured in North Korea to give you a rare window of daily life at the DPRK. And a few days later, Dr. Martin Brudenmiller, that's a few hard names to pronounce recently, to talk about doing business in China. Okay, today's talk is about the future of media in the time of peril and struggling financial models for in-depth journalism. And how will the next generation cover stories that matter? Charles Sennett will share his insight as an award-winning veteran journalist for 30 years, with 30 years of experience, including formerly a longtime foreign correspondent for the Boston Globe and the former Middle East bureau chief for the paper. But he also shares perspective from a perspective of an entrepreneur and pioneer of digital media, based on 8 years of establishing new business models that are needed to sustain international reporting. He co-founded the Global Post, which launched in 2008. In fact, 7 years ago, he was right here on the podium to talk about the launch of Global Post. So in a way, he's come full circle to talk about building the news organization, the successes and failures, the challenges it faced, particularly the financial obstacles. He will also talk about his latest nonprofit startup called the Ground Truth Project, a new media model that focuses on mentoring a new generation of journalists, especially for this digital age. He will leave here to embark on another project in Afghanistan, so safety practices are a top priority for him. Let's hear what he has to say. Everyone, please give a warm welcome to Charles M. Sennett.
Thank you, Nani. Thank you. Thanks. And thanks to the Foreign Correspondents Club of Hong Kong. It is great to be back. As Nani mentioned, it's been 7 years, not quite to the day, but almost to the month, where I was here talking about Global Post before we even launched. We launched in January of 2009, and I was traveling around the world and hiring the team that would become Global Post. And now, 7 years later, I'm really proud of what Global Post has become. We have an amazing team that works very hard. Global Post, how many of you know about Global Post? So Global Post is an online international news organization, about 70 correspondents, mostly a network of freelancers in 50 countries. It's produced award-winning work. I'm going to tell you a little bit about it. And I'm very proud to be co-founder, but I have moved on, and now I'm really dedicating all of my passion, all my energy to the Ground Truth Project, where I'm the founder and the executive director. And I'll explain Ground Truth Project through a series of slides. I think it'll be good to give you the journey. I wanted to just also start off by saying, 7 years ago, I was also here at the invitation of Ying Chan, who is my friend, my colleague for many years at the New York Daily News. And this year, I am again a guest of Ying, and also of Keith Richberg, who's a friend, colleague for a long time. And we have been sitting around the last few days trying to cook up some way to work together. We're hoping to figure that out. And I might throw out some ideas to you about that. Thank you for having me. I want to jump right in, quickly get to some questions, and I want to build off of the conversation that Gary Pruitt, the CEO of AP, had here earlier this week. How many of you were here for that talk? Okay, because I think the two are very complementary. What I wanted to start with is just describing for you ground truth and really get into a definition of what is ground truth. So ground truth is a very obvious meaning. You hear it in a military context, you can hear it sometimes in a meteorological context, but the phrase was coined by NASA. And ground truth is a very specific and very scientific word with a very precise meaning. Ground truth is a patch of earth that is measured by a human being using a human eye to focus on that Earth, so that you can calibrate the accuracy of satellite imagery in space. So the pixels from a satellite won't make sense without ground truth. And for us, that's the metaphor for what we want to do. That's what we want to teach young people to do, to be the metric for human measurement on the ground, so that in the digital age, we can organize all those pixels and all that information and make sense of what's going on in the world. So I never thought of NASA as poetic, but if you read their definition, it ends with this phrase that I do think is poetic, which is that when there is a conflict between the human reading of ground truth and the satellite imagery and the digital configuration of the pixels, trust the human reading. And I really believe in that. I really believe in trusting the human reading on the ground by people who really do the work, who are real journalists, who are there in person covering what's happening. I think we're missing out on that in this new age of journalism. I think we've gotten too used to reporting from cubicles. We rely too much on opinion. And we have just too many people pontificating and not enough people doing the great old school reporting that I was lucky enough to do for really my whole life. I love it. I know there are many practitioners of ground truth in this room. I know I have many kindred souls. But I wanted to really go through that definition so you understand what it is. It's something I've done my whole life. This is where I will be returning to, almost precisely this place. This is October 7th, 2001, the beginning of the war in Afghanistan following the attacks of 9/11. This photograph is, for me, was taken by a colleague, and it is literally the moment that America's longest war started. It's October 7th, the moment the airstrikes begin. And I think about this now almost 15 years later, 14 years to be precise. I am still covering this war. Many of us are still covering this war. And that sense of endless war is very much a part of what we want to report on at Ground Truth. So we have a team that is there in Afghanistan. Some members of the team are there right now. I'm going to go and join them. And we're looking at a big project on ending America's longest war. And we have titled it Forever Stand. And it certainly feels like endless war these days. So I look forward to sharing with you or having you come online and really see the work that we've done. I hope you'll follow it on Ground Truth. I also love this photograph because this is how we covered the first war of the 21st century. You had to cross the Kaukja River by horseback. And I think the old school methodology of being there on the ground and doing the stories has never changed. This picture might as well have been taken 100 years ago. It doesn't matter that we had sat phones. It doesn't matter that we had good computers. It doesn't matter that we had digital photography. What matters is that you were there or you weren't. And I think this photograph has that quality of it's timeless, and it's been a long and bizarre, I would say, even gauging by that picture, absurd journey in Afghanistan. In 2006, I was back in Afghanistan coming off of a year at the Nieman Foundation. How many of you know about the Nieman Fellowship at Harvard? So a wonderful year for burned out war correspondents. And I was able to go there and really recover for a year. And what I thought about was I really want to do something different. I could feel traditional media was starting to really give way. You could feel like the bottom was going to fall out. And I wanted to start a new news organization online. And so I met up with a co-founder and we started in trying to think this out. Originally, my idea was to do a nonprofit and to call it Ground Truth. And this was in 2006. And it really was on this trip with a colleague named Gary Knight, who's now my co-founder, where I began to think of this idea and think, what if we had a nonprofit where we built teams of top reporters who could work together and work across platforms, come in and play a role where traditional media is failing now in international reporting because it's expensive. How could we do that? But I wasn't able to pull it off. I didn't have the skill set to create a nonprofit, and I had to put it on pause. And I ended up working with another co-founder on a for-profit model called Global Post. And Global Post, as I shared with you, launched in January of 2009 and worked very hard on that over the last years. and built the editorial team in Boston and out in the field. It's gone on to establish important partnerships. We have won a lot of awards at Global Post. And by 2012, the audience had reached up to 5 million. That number is actually lower now. But it's an enterprise that I think all of us at Global Post are very proud of. We've worked toward a new model that's more stealth, that's different than establishment media, that is fully digital, fully online, and long may it live. But I wanted to experiment at Global Post, and I began to partner with other larger news organizations, many of them from PBS, particularly Frontline. And part of this is just loving to be out in the field. You know, the Arab Spring was starting to happen in 2011, and there was no way I wanted to miss that. So yeah, I had become an entrepreneur and a manager, but I was sitting in the newsroom thinking, I have got to be in Tahrir Square. So when Frontline asked to partner with us, I went myself, and we worked with a group of young journalists, and an idea really began to gel as I worked with these unbelievably talented Egyptian journalists and American journalists, that there's a need for mentoring in the field. So I went and worked with, I can't tell you how talented these Egyptian journalists were. They were the reason this was an award-winning documentary. Frontline is an amazing team, one of the greatest editorial teams I've ever worked with. But I also was energized by the young people who worked with us on this. And it got me thinking about going back to my original idea for a nonprofit. Global Post is an editorial success, but it's struggled a lot with its financial model. It's very hard to make the news organization profitable, very hard, and we're not there yet. It's very hard to build it in a way that you can do the kind of in-depth reporting that I know everyone at Global Post wants to do and sustain that with online advertising. So we began to look for other options. And I began to talk with the board of directors of Global Post about the possibility of building a nonprofit that could be a companion to Global Post, where we could go to the big foundations and we could go to individual donors and we could raise money that would allow us to do stories that we may not otherwise be able to do. Stories like documentaries with Frontline, work with PRI The World, take on big in-depth reporting on global health and human rights. And we got lucky and we began to really get some traction. So I went back to the drawing board and started Ground Truth. First incubating it at Global Post for several years, really working in tandem with our team there, and trying to use the wisdom of our board and to try to just grow a nonprofit and see if we could pull this off. So that took a few years, but we've succeeded. We now have our 501c3. We're a recognized nonprofit. We are separate and independent of Global Post. We still publish many of our in-depth reports, which we call special reports, on Global Post. But we have an array of editorial partners that include Global Post, but also include Frontline, PRI The World, MSNBC, Huffington Post, and others. And we're looking for more partners. So if you have ideas and your news organization would want to partner with us, we'd love to do that. We also have academic partners. We partner closely with Columbia School of Journalism on global health coverage. We partner with USC Annenberg on our religion coverage. And we are hoping now to start a new partnership right here with Hong Kong University and with Ying Chan's journalism program. And we're just starting to give that shape, so I'm hoping that will come together. The mission statement of Ground Truth, I've gone through it, but here it is very specifically, is to train, mentor, and inspire new generations of correspondents to do on-the-ground reporting and really to help them publish what we hope will always be innovative digital projects that will go across different platforms. We then take these projects that they have published and that we've helped them through editing and mentoring, and then we distribute it out to our editorial partners. The idea is one that has, I think, a virtuous cycle. If we can do this right, we'll be inspiring and empowering the next generation, we'll be delivering for editorial partners, and then we can expand and diversify our funding with foundations and individuals. I wanted to just share with you a couple of the projects so you get a sense of it. One we covered in Egypt was called Covering a Revolution. Revolution in quotes, you will notice. this group of young people who we first met in Tahrir Square, we began to really work with, and now we are still in touch with many of them. Several of them, including the woman in the lower right-hand corner, now work for us full-time. That's my colleague Gary Knight in the background, mentoring her on photography. She's a gifted writer. Her name is Lauren Bond. She works with us full-time in the Middle East, looking at women's rights and minority rights in the post-Arab Spring. Very gifted reporter. These other colleagues who worked with us, talented young people, have gone on to do amazing work. And many of them are at 60 Minutes, AP, NPR, really doing great work. We've also worked in Haiti. And one of the things that we always do is we work across cultural lines. So we bring in young American journalists and we partner them with the local journalists from the countries we're covering. We did that in Egypt, we did it in Haiti for an award-winning investigative series called Faultline, Aid, Politics, and Blame in Post-Quake Haiti. We did this in global health. I shared with you that we partner with Columbia School of Journalism. The Kaiser Foundation has funded us for a fifth year to really go deep on global health, and this year we're looking at infectious disease. We also do conferences and forums with the Harvard School of Public Health out of this. The religion reporting that I mentioned to you is funded by the Luce Foundation, and our global health reporting won first place globally for coverage of global health with three young people, all of them part-time. We beat CNN and the New York Times for global health coverage. Young people right now are on fire. They are so talented. If you can harness that talent, you can have an incredibly successful news organization, and that's really what we're trying to do. We also came in first place for Religion News Writers Association for any news organization in America for covering religion. So we are, to use a boxing metaphor, we are punching way above our weight class in terms of the work that we feel we can deliver through Ground Truth. One of our favorite projects was in Myanmar. We took 10 Burmese journalists, 10 American, put them together in what we call a pop-up newsroom, and really worked closely with these young journalists who didn't have the benefit of the university campuses, which have been closed, as you all know, for too long. And they needed polish, they needed mentoring, they needed editing, they needed encouragement, they needed funding, and they needed a break. A lot of them worked really hard for low pay. We were able to give them a sort of very lush reporting fellowship where they worked with American colleagues as equals. And they built an amazing team and they did beautiful work. We were very lucky to have Dao Su come and speak to the group. She was supposed to stay 15 minutes. She stayed almost 3 hours. These people are infectious. These young, talented journalists grab your attention. And I am seeing this all over the world. And I know many of you work with young people in your news organizations, but it is an amazing time, a revolutionary moment, as I have shared with Ying's class, and I share every time I get a chance talking to young people about the opportunities that are out there right now. This is just some of the other kinds of reporting we've done. This is really the model for what we want to do now. This is Generation TBD was looking at youth unemployment around the world in 10 countries with 20 journalists. A very ambitious project. It ran on MSNBC. We were on Huffington Post. We led the Huffington Post page for most of a day, which is a huge juggernaut of traffic. We had pieces on PRI The World, and we also published on Global Post as a special report. Generation TBD has become the model for what we want to do, conferences and workshops. Basically taking millennial reporters and having them cover the biggest stories that will impact their generation. That's the model that we're really pursuing now. In this generation, you also have a lot of freelancers out in the field. And these freelancers are, as I have said, super talented, but they're also looking for opportunities. And as you know, many of them go freelance. And when journalists go to do freelance work, they often put themselves in peril. And one of the things we have an obligation to in our profession now is to make sure that these young journalists understand it is an incredible time of peril. I don't think it has ever been so dangerous to be out in the field. Statistically, Committee to Protect Journalists, the International Press Institute, anyone who is keeping the numbers will tell you it has never been more dangerous. I've lost many friends and colleagues. I'm sure you have too. Keith and I share a number of friends who've been killed in recent years. Marie Colvin, Anthony Shadid, Tim Hetherington, and the list is long. But the one I wanted to just mention for a minute is Jim Foley. Jim Foley worked as a freelancer, and he worked at Times with Global Post. And Jim Foley was captured by ISIS in 2012. And it was a long 2-year ordeal for his family and for the whole family of Global Post and Ground Truth, who went through this long period of him being held captive by ISIS. In August, he was murdered. He was beheaded by ISIS. So many of you may have heard Jim Foley's story on CNN or Al Jazeera, BBC. It was a global event, and I think it's a sobering event for all of us who really care about the work, who really care about Ground Truth. If we're going to be there on the ground, we have to recognize the peril that's out there, and we have to do more to make it a safer opportunity for young journalists, and that might mean discouraging them from going to war zones, something that I'm actively pursuing now with a lot of young people. You do not need to start your career right in the line of fire at a time when the game is changing dramatically. There are many great journalists who did this. They were young freelancers. They went and covered Vietnam, or they covered the war in Iraq. But it's a different world now. We've always faced risks as foreign correspondents of being caught in a crossfire. The risk now is you are in the crosshairs. You are targeted as a journalist in the field. And we're going to need to recognize that. We're going to need to deal with that. That's why I wanted to build on what Gary Pruitt, the CEO of AP, did so beautifully in his talk here just the other day. Gary really focused on safety for journalists. We're very proud that Gary and the Associated Press have been so supportive of a movement that's a call for global safety principles and practices. I have copies of it here, and I'd love you to take it if your news organization would be interested in joining. It's basically setting a set of standards so that we can create a baseline for safety for correspondents in the field. This isn't meant to be the final document that will establish safety guidelines. It's meant to be a shared set of principles for a shared culture of safety, so we can at least start somewhere. So this document is now signed on to by about 70 news organizations, including the BBC, AP, Reuters, and we're hoping to add to that list. We're very proud that the Foreign Correspondents Club of Hong Kong signed on yesterday. This is a movement for safety for journalists in the field. So please let me know if there aren't enough copies, we can put you online to be able to see it. And I hope your news organization, if you represent one, will join it. I'm just going to end there. I wanted to share with you briefly, these are the partners we work with. These are some of the places that support our funding. And I really want to encourage you to go on to Ground Truth and to see what we're doing. Look at these fellowships that we're offering. Look at the kind of opportunities I think we can give to young people and the kind of partnerships we're developing with the news organizations and also with academic institutions. So Ground Truth is my second startup. Global Post was my first. Ground Truth, for me, is really the core of what I love to do, to be out in the field, to be on the ground, to be telling the stories that matter. And I think it's really a time for our generation to share the lessons we've learned with a new generation, not only because they need to hear them, but because we need to hear their lessons if we're going to figure out the future. One of the reasons I'm doing the Ground Truth is because it puts us in direct contact with young correspondents who are going to be the ones who figure out how we do this. I am convinced after 7 years of working really hard on trying to build news organizations in the digital age that the most entrepreneurial spirit lies right in the young people who are going to be creating their own jobs and doing the journalism for the future in ways that we haven't even thought of yet. So I'm hoping that Ground Truth will become an incubator for an entrepreneurial spirit, not just a way to share lessons, old school lessons of the past that some old guy like me can depart, but also really create a new energy for young people so that they help us figure out the future so we can continue to do Ground Truth. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charles. We have time for questions. If you could put your hand up if you do have one, and please identify yourself, especially if you're from a media outlet. We have a lady here. lady over there.
Edith Terry, former journalist, and I was here 7 years ago when you gave your earlier talk. I just looked at the front page of Global Post and World Post, which is a more recent competitor. Global
Post, which is the Huffington Post's new world
which
page.
Which is a Huffington Post, also owned by a major banker, philanthropist. Not Huffington Post, World Post.
I think of it as owned by AOL, which I wouldn't.
Oh, Nicholas Bergerman?
Yeah, but okay. But World Post is owned, I think, by AOL.
Well, leaving that aside.
All right.
So, question is, Global Post's front page has a headline on Indian police going after toilet maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
World Post has kind of a diversified set of headlines that include Yemen and Iraq, and it looks like a real newspaper. What happened to Global Post, and how do you regard that experience now?
It's funny because Ying Chan, a very distinguished professor of journalism, yesterday was telling us we really need to focus on toilets in the world, and that it's a huge issue around the world. So I challenge you on the editorial choice of Global Post. I'd also hasten to add, I'm focused on ground truth. I don't make the editorial decisions at Global Post, but I'll defend them. Global Post had the lead story yesterday on the Nigerian election. We shift the front page all the time at Global Post. And I think a very strong editorial mix of serious and feature news. And I would argue that that is a very important issue that they're featuring. There are times I don't like the editorial decisions at Global Post, and I'll be candid about that. I know that it's a competitive world in which they're trying to get traffic so that they can sustain a business model. But I was also the city editor of the New York Daily News, a very feisty tabloid in New York City where Ying and I were proud to work, where we did good work. But Ying, I think you would agree with me, we were not proud of that front page every day. It was often going into tabloid land. That's not new. Finding the right mix on a front page, looking for how you combine features and serious news in the world, constant challenge of a good news organization. You have to balance that. I think Global Post does a good job. I think ground truth is a different mission. For me, ground truth is the core of what I think I'm hearing from you really care about, and that is getting out there and telling the stories that really matter, that can have impact, that can make a difference. And I agree with you, we need more of it. The question is, what is the business model to sustain it? And I don't know the answer, and I don't think anyone does. We live in the Middle Ages. There's a collapsing set of empires of old school media that are falling all around us. And what will be the new empires? What will be these new city-states that will rise up after the Middle Ages and do great journalism is yet to be determined. And I think we at Ground Truth are trying to be part of that future that does the in-depth, the serious, the investigative, and I hope can make a difference. But I'm going to tell you right now, it's a struggle. It's very hard. I've tried for 7 years to work with colleagues on a for-profit model, and now I'm going to try like hell to work on this nonprofit model. And right now, our traction for in-depth work is stronger in the nonprofit model because the foundations want to support it, and there are individuals who want to support it. So all I know is all of us who care, and it sounds like you would be among that list, we have to be in this fight. You can't stand on the sidelines. If you care about it, it's time to really do something about it. It's time to jump in, roll up your sleeves. There's a revolution going on. We invite you in. Thank you.
Any more questions? We have the gentleman over there.
Yes, hi, I'm Per Liljas. I'm a stringer with a Swedish newspaper. I'm wondering a bit about how your stories are spawned with Ground Truth. How does the whole process work? Who comes up with the idea? Who does what work?
Yeah.
Do you always work in teams, or how does it work?
Thank you. Great question. Many of the editors at Ground Truth are former reporting fellows, young people who we gave a chance to. We saw their amazing talent, and we've actually elevated them to be editors of Global Health. Or our managing editor, I found him straight out of graduate school. His name's Kevin Grant. He's an incredibly talented journalist. Not so young anymore. He's been working with me long enough that I think he'd be the first to admit that. But we come up with the ideas together, and then we sort of put them out to these young teams by calling for reporting fellowships and seeing who will apply. Then we vet those young reporting fellows, and we try to pick an A team, and then we go out and explore that theme based on people who've shown an interest in it. I think it's a real collaborative process. Any good journalism is, and any good journalism begins with an idea, but it stays open to how you're going to define that idea once you're there on the ground. It's one of the great curses of big news organizations is too often they go into a project thinking they know where it's going to go. I hope we can stay small enough, nimble enough to allow ourselves to define the story as we go along, guided by the facts on the ground.
Oh, gentleman over there.
Hi, Prashant Rao, I'm with AFP. I was wondering, like, a lot of the stuff on Ground Truth, and I feel like on Global Post, is highly thematic, or it's, you know, you decide on a project and you go from there.
Yeah.
Is your feeling that with, you know, with traditional media like AFP and, you mm-hmm. know, your former employers, mm-hmm. the idea was to have a permanent bureau, and the bureau would cover a region rather than a theme?
Right.
I mean, do you feel like that's part of the change that we're going to see, that increasingly, like, with your out with, you know, the kind of outfits or mm-hmm. the sort of enterprises you're involved in, that
yeah.
news organizations should be focusing more on thematic issues rather than just having, oh, we'll have, like, a Hong Kong bureau?
Yeah. I mean, I hope both are true, because I don't think you can really get at the good thematic stories if you don't have a bureau, if you're not living there. If you're not living and breathing the story, I don't think you're going to come up with the great special report from that region. So I hope both are true. I do think you put forward a really good question. I've been thinking about this a lot. I do think in the digital age, the reality is you can get at hard news anywhere in the world pretty quickly. You know, you can pull it down from the sources who are there on the ground if it's the quick hit, the coverage of a press conference, the announcement of election results in Nigeria. I think the greater challenge, the place where I think we need to put more resources, is how you define these stories. How do you help people really get what we call an environment of understanding, where you can show the topography of Afghanistan, where you can show the billions and billions of dollars that were wasted in building the ring road, which is how we're defining this project we're doing in Afghanistan. The number of lives lost on this road, and for what? What did it accomplish? To look at the girls' schools along that road, you feel like maybe it did accomplish something. But if you look at all of the bombed out tracts of road from IEDs all along the way, you'd say we're no different than the other empires, from the Soviet Union to the British Empire, who came and have had little impact, despite a lot of lost lives, lost money. I think we need more reporting that provides that sweep, that provides that context. And I think it's a great challenge for news organizations like AFP to stop and afford to be able to do that. So I'm hoping that Ground Truth can provide a service there, that we can go in. We can go in with young people who are really talented, and we can try to do something that maybe the other larger wire services in particular aren't able to do. Now, I hasten to add, Reuters is pretty damn good at enterprise reporting. AP is pretty damn good at special projects, and I know they do that work as well. But I do think we need more of it. And I really feel deeply that Ground Truth wants to play in that space. We call it, as I say, environments of understanding. And I really invite you to go on our site. Look at how we define the Sunni-Shia divide in our series titled In the Land of Cain and Abel. And look at the date when that story started and how far ahead we were in trying to unpack that very complex terrain. Look at the stories we did on income inequality long before Pope Francis was even nominated and talking about income inequality. Before President Obama was really focusing on it. We went in and we defined it globally in a series that not only looked at income inequality around the world, it looked at it in America. And we wanted to drag America by the shirt collar into a mirror to see that the inequality that exists in America is mirrored in the world. And we're part of a world of inequality. And I think that kind of reporting takes a real determination of effort, takes a lot of creativity. And that's the space we're trying to fill at Ground Truth.
Oh, we have a question from Florence.
Thank you. I'm Florence de Changier, reporter for Le Monde and RFI. I wanted to ask you, how can you tell us how you fund all this? Because in a way, it looks like a dream journalism school in the field. I mean, it's great, and I think that there are many equally talented people at actually possibly every generation. But it is nowadays as well a big issue of money in many media outlets. Mm-hmm. So in this case, how do you do it? Mm.
I think there probably are an equally talented number of people in every generation, but not every generation grows up native to a revolutionary change, which is the digital age. So that's, to refine that point, that's what I mean. That there is a new music that we need to hear. And those of us who are from a different generation, we don't dance to it that well. And we've got to allow young people to really lead us in how we're going to figure that out. So that, sorry if I wasn't precise there. How do we fund it? Great question. It's been a great fortune of ours to go to big foundations and to share this vision with them after years of working on Global Post and showing that we can do this kind of work, but saying that we need help to be able to fund it in a nonprofit model if we're really going to dive in on it. The foundations have been incredibly generous, and they've heard this, and they've supported us. So with a huge thanks to the Ford Foundation, who really got behind us early, who allowed us to take some chances as a for-profit organization to try to incubate a nonprofit within it and then create a separate entity with really clear laws and really clear guidelines. And once we had that clear separation and independence, we're now seeing more foundations jump in. So we have Luce Foundation for reporting on religion. We have the Knight Foundation, which we're working with on a small scale, we hope to increase. We have the Kaiser Foundation, who supports our coverage of global health. And we've had individual family trusts, so families of considerable wealth in the United States who care about a certain issue, who see their money as not only creating profit, but social profit and social good, and trying to share with them that we need this work in the world. We need these eyes out in the world getting ground truth. It's important for us to understand this world. And we live in a time when we need more reporting in the world, not less. And the pendulum has kicked back. News organizations are cutting reporting right at a time when we face all these complex issues and we need to understand the world. So the smart foundations and individuals of wealth who really understand that have been very supportive of us. And I would quickly add, we are fiercely independent. We make sure it is understood that if we take funding, we retain full editorial control. And if a funder can't live with that, we don't work with them. Mm. And you do have to sometimes walk away from potential funding if you want to preserve that independence.
And so what's the total budget of the project?
Our total budget this year will be a little over $1 million a year, so about $1.25 million a year. We have 3 years of runway ahead of us, and we are looking to really build on that. We want to try, I'll share with you our challenge, our goal. We're trying to double to $2 million within 3 years and have 5 years of runway at that rate. So we're trying to do a very big raise right now, and what it comes down to is good ideas and finding the people who want to support them.
Okay, Francis?
Yeah, Francis Moriarty, freelance. An observation, then a question that's kind of a cluster of questions, really, I suppose. Mm-hmm. First of all, I just want to say in response to what Edith mentioned before, we've just done the judging for the Human Rights Press Awards, and interestingly enough, there were quite a number of contributions at which toilets were at the center as a public health issue, a public safety issue, as a woman's issue, looked at from quite a number of different ways. So I would say there's actually a certain timeliness to that issue. So I support what was just said.
We got you on this one.
Coming back to the question of how to monetize, you're using a philanthropic model now. And out of the United States and some parts of Europe, particularly Scandinavia, that kind of model has a chance of working. But that notion of philanthropy doesn't really extend to a lot of other parts of the world, or it comes with strings attached that I don't think that you would want to take. So in a world where people want to be affirmed more than they want to be informed, how do you think that you could make this beyond your 3 to 5 year runway sustain itself? Because as somebody who's freelancing now, I can't see how one sustains oneself in 2015 on rates that are even below what people were being paid in 1985.
Well, if you're being paid rates below 1985, I think that's wrong. And I think that news organizations need to step up and they need to pay freelancers what they deserve. And I really think that's a culture that we have to get at because we are increasingly relying on freelancers. So I am an advocate for putting forward the idea that we need to collectively as an industry find a way to step up and recognize that if we're going to rely on freelancers, we have to pay them. We have to particularly pay them in a way that they can operate safely. So you'll see in the call for global safety principles and practices, we say you should be insured. You should have first aid training. If you're in a conflict zone, you need Kevlar, you need a helmet, and you need to have a risk analysis that's very well thought through. And if you don't have those, no news organization should work with you as a freelancer. And if you do have them, that news organization has a moral responsibility to pay you sufficiently to have that insurance, to have that first aid training, or provide it for you. And I think that's a recognition that is growing in our industry. Global Post has recognized it. Ground Truth has recognized it. Reuters, AP, AFP has been recognizing this, and it has signed on, proud to say. We're building momentum for a new culture of safety, and that's right at the core of how do we make this sustain. If we have that culture, I think it will sustain. You bring up a really important point about global philanthropy and funding. The United States has a history and a legacy of philanthropy, institutional philanthropy. It's unique in the world. We give a lot of money in America through philanthropic giving. What we don't have is government support for media that's independent and free, like the BBC. We have NPR, we have some of it, we have PBS, those are proud traditions. But the BBC has very significant funding through the television tax and a structure of government support for excellence. So does Canadian broadcasting, and so do many other European news organizations. So where the European models and other models around the world have had the sustenance of a government that cared about journalism, the United States has turned to a private model, which has had great successes and abject failures, and a philanthropic model, which is increasingly important in the landscape of media. So I think it's going to be different, and it's going to be uneven, and there will be different expressions of it around the world. But I do think these foundations play an extraordinarily important role right now in that time that I shared with you that I think of as the Middle Ages. It's an incredibly romantic time to do journalism. It is an unbelievable moment of excitement, opportunity, but a time of tumult, a time of uncertainty, and a time of chaos. And I think in that void, to know these foundations are stepping in, it's really important. And I'm not just glad-handing here. These foundations are really, right now, an important part of saving the civilizations of journalism until we figure out the models that are really going to work and really sustain. And I believe we will do that. I believe that that's going to happen. I just think it's going to take longer than a lot of us who are in the entrepreneurial realm right now realized. And I think we've also realized it can take compromises that many of us aren't willing to make. To go down market in your traffic, to drive your numbers up so you can get more ad dollars. That's not a new challenge for news organizations, as I pointed out. It's as old as circulation wars and the tabloids in New York City. And it's as modern as BuzzFeed versus Huffington Post. What you need to do is hold on to the values that matter. Great academic institutions will teach the next generations how to do that. We want Ground Truth to be a bridge from those academic institutions that care to the news organizations who can eventually take these talented young people once they've been tested. So we see ourselves very much as a middle ground, a bridge.
Thank you. That's all we have time for. Thank you for the riveting talk, Charles. Everyone give a round of applause.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you.